Hi, Roger.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks.
Good. My name's Lisa Lee. I'm from Donald K. Donald Universal in Montreal. I'm going to give you a quick conference around the table and let you know who's on this call. We have from Choix FM in Quebec, Laurent Boulay.
Hi.
Hi.
We have from Chaume FM in Montreal, Neil Kushner.
Hi, Roger.
We have from CKMS in Montreal, Mark Denencourt.
Hello.
Hi, Mark.
We have from CQA in Montreal, Patricia Tedros.
Hi, Roger.
Hi, Patricia.
And we have from C107 in Toronto, Mr. Jeff Woods.
Good evening, Roger.
Hi, Jeff.
So, Laurent, you can start.
Okay. Hi, Roger, again. This story is a little bit of a good surprise. You haven't released anything since the news to death. That was 7 years ago. Isn't it irregular to go on tour without a new album?
Yeah, I suppose it is, rather.
Okay, but what's the reason to go on the tour?
Well, I'll tell you what the reason is. In 92, when I was making Amused to Death, I did a show in the Universal Amphitheatre in Los Angeles for Don Henley's Walden Woods project. And it was a great evening. I did a few numbers with Don's band. He did some numbers. John Fogerty played some numbers. And Neil Young did some numbers. And I really enjoyed it. And it kind of rekindled my desire to go on the road. I'm going to be with my family in the East Coast for several months this summer and fall. And I thought to myself, as long as I'm there, maybe I might do a few gigs. So I called Frank Barcelona at Premier Talent and Barbara Skydell, and they called around a few promoters and said, what do you think? You know, Roger would like to do some gigs and in these kind of venues, and they all seemed kind of enthusiastic and said, yep, they'll do it if you want to do it. And so I said, okay, let's do it. So I'm doing 20 shows between the third week of July and the third week of August. And that's the answer.
Okay, thanks.
Not at all.
Neil?
Roger, I have very good memories of a Radio Chaos show I saw here at the Montreal Forum about 10 years ago. Will this tour you're bringing on the road be anywhere near as theatrical as what we saw back then?
No, it won't be as complicated as that. I'm using quad sound, as usual, and I'm using some Pani projectors as my main source of illustration of the ideas. But we're doing smaller venues than I was doing on that tour, and not as many gigs as well. So the whole thing doesn't really support the idea of putting together a very big show. However, I've had an idea in my mind about producing a show with very little stage lighting, where it's mainly projections in front of house spots and sound. And I think it can. I think it'll be quite interesting.
Okay, Mark from CKMS.
Mark?
We are someone from here. Hi there.
Hi.
With your huge body of work, all the songs that you have produced now that are still as popular today as they were back then, you feel trapped by this success, or we're going to hear some new material and you feel freer to do new things?
I feel free to do new things. That's not what this tour is about. Though I think I will probably be doing one new song. I have a plan to go into the studio early next year to make a new album, because I've got a number of songs and I've got an idea of what I want to do. But so no, this show, there might be one new song, but most of it will be retrospective.
Okay, Patricia?
Roger, I was wondering, I guess you like Montreal?
Yes, I have fond memories of Montreal.
Yeah, what kind of memories do you have?
I remember swimming through that weird tunnel in the Bonaventure Hotel when it was freezing cold outside, and they had that great swimming pool where you could swim indoors and outdoors. And I'm trying to remember if Montreal is Donald K. Donald's town.
It is.
Well, if it is, then
there are certainly stories there.
Yeah, I have good memories of Donald's toes curling and of playing golf with him. He's a highly competitive and companion on the golf course.
And he still is. Jeff Wood from Q107?
Hey, Roger, I've got so much to get to, but let me go with this. In terms of new music and touring, what's your vision of the future of Floyd?
Yeah, my vision is the future of what?
Of Pink Floyd.
Of Pink Floyd? I have no idea. You'd have to ask them.
Do you have a hope, a dream, a direction you'd like to see it go? Or is there any hope for the future of the band in terms of what you would like?
Well, no, it's nothing to do with me.
Okay.
They're completely separate entities now.
Yeah, let me do a part two to that, if no one
Yeah, mind. Please do.
How recent and of what nature is the communication with Gilmore and the rest of the band been?
Let me think. I don't think we've communicated anything for a number of years. We are in a state now, I think, of a comfortable state of separation, if I may put it like that.
I understand. It's a damn shame, if I might say so.
Well, you know, it might be a damn shame for you, but it's not for me.
No, you're a busy man. You've got lots to go. I wanted to get to your 7-year project, the opera that you've been working on.
All right.
You mentioned that this. I was reading on the internet trying to get an update. This new project that you're working on is called Sat Yeha.
Yeah.
And it is supposed to be, from what they tell us on the net, a French and English opera.
Yeah.
Est-ce que vous chantez en français? Can you sing in French?
I have sung in French on the demo. I won't be singing on either of the records that we're making.
Okay.
But the libretto was written in French by a French lyricist called Étienne Rodagil, and he brought the libretto to me and asked me if I would set it to music 10 years ago.
I see. So you don't write in French then?
No, I don't write in French. The writing that I've done in terms of the lyrical content of this thing has been to write an English version from the original libretto, which is in French.
I see. Well, since we've all gone around the table and we do have some time, if anybody would like to continue the conversation, please do. Just state who you are and what station you're from.
Okay, Laurent Boulet from Choix FM. You talked about the opera, Sat Yeha.
Yeah.
But is there any chance to have a new album of Roger Waters soon?
Yeah, I am going into the studio next February.
Okay.
I have booked some time to go into the studio and start work on a new album.
Okay.
Roger, it's Neil Kushner at Show FM in Montreal. I'm
yeah.
wondering if you can give us an idea of who some of the musicians who will be touring with you will be this summer.
Andy Fairweather-Lowe is with me again. Graham Broad, who was on the Chaos Tour with me. Katie Hoot-Kassoon, who was on that tour. I think probably Pat Arnold will be singing with Katie. John Karen, a keyboard player, well, plays keyboards and guitar, who I haven't worked with before, but he knows a lot of the songs because he worked with on the last couple of Pink Floyd tours, I think. Who else? A guitar player and singer from Jimmy Ray Vaughan's band called Doyle Bramall. And that's us for the moment. I might be adding another keyboard player. I'm going to wait and see in rehearsals, you know, how many hands we've got and whether we need any extra pairs of hands.
And do we dare ask how you now feel about performing material from your former band?
Well, I feel fine about it. You know, I've performed stuff that I wrote when I was in Pink Floyd since I left in you know, both the previous tours that I've done, and I like performing my songs. I have no problem with that.
Patricia from Sick What? I was wondering, do you know what you're going to do on your New Year's Eve?
Yeah, I should spend New Year's Eve with my family.
Okay, so no shows.
What?
You're not going to do a show or?
No.
Okay.
Marc Deloncourt, CKMS à Montréal. What do you want to sing about? What inspires you these days for the next album?
You know, the next album, I think, is... my work has always been kind of rather political and a lot of polemic and kind of agitprop. And I've come more and more to the view that... the revolution is, you know, within us as individuals, and you can't really change anyone but yourself. But notwithstanding that, I still have a sense of community, which is why I like to perform where there's a sense of intimacy with an audience, I suppose, because that's kind of important to me. And to share feelings with other people and in some sense to make the attempt to explain something about what we call human life, it seems to me is what art is, what the artist's job is. I wrote a poem a few years ago after I'd read a novel by the American novelist Cormac McCarthy called All the Pretty Horses, which is a wonderful piece of work. And it's a kind of book that is so beautifully written and so kind of elevating that you don't want to put it down because it's so moving. And I wrote a poem that started off, there is a magic in some books that sucks a man into connections for the spirits hard to touch that join him to his kind. And the poem goes on and on, but that phrase kind of epitomizes to me how I feel about writing songs and performing them and continuing to explore connections that I feel with my past and my future and other people.
So you miss the stage very much?
No, because, well, I don't know whether I do or not. I really enjoyed doing the gig that I did with Don Henley, you know, seven years ago now, and that kind of, I thought, well, I'd like to do some more of this. And it is true that in the light of what happened to Pink Floyd, I could remember how it had been years before, before we were kind of overtaken by the numbers, and before those connections that we made were obliterated by the weight of numbers. And so, yeah, I always, you know, hanker for that. There's that moment when you create something and you stand back and finish a painting and you get the tingle down the spine and you think, well, that's finished. I'm talking about a song or a piece of music. But there's also it's a very important moment to share that stuff with an audience. And when you get a good response from an audience, it's very moving.
Roger, it's Jeff Woods again.
Yeah.
Typically, I mean, from what you've said so far, lyrically, your new music will be as inspired as ever. Sonically, can you suggest what direction you might be going in, either in comparison to previous records you've done or in any terms you'd like to suggest to me, in terms of the heaviness, the softness, anything musically and sonically you might offer?
I have no idea, because the songs that I've done at the moment are in my head, but I've only played them on the piano or on a guitar or on a single guitar, and how I or we, because I will probably work with the producer, will develop them in the studio, I really have no idea. My feeling is that it's likely to be very simple, you know?
Thank you.
On Amused to Death, originally, It's a Miracle, I don't know if you know that record, but It's a Miracle was originally an up-tempo number, and towards the end I realized that it didn't fit in the record, it was wrong. So we started again and re-recorded that number, and we did it in an afternoon, and it's very, very, very simple. But I love it, you know, so, I don't know, I think probably simple techniques are what I'm moving towards, you know, simpler lines.
From the press I've read, Roger, with regard to Amused to Death, that was one that was pointed out as one that you'd like to revive perhaps greatly more than the others, because I was thinking maybe it didn't get the fair shake it deserved because it's a very clever record.
Well, you know, what deserves what, you know.
Well, obviously you want to revive it. You must regard it as something that maybe didn't get enough exposure or something.
Well, I don't think there's any did or didn't, you know, get enough. I mean, it's always difficult when you've been in a successful band to go on working in a solo capacity after that, because a lot of people not just don't notice what you're doing because you're no longer in the band. That happens to a certain extent, but other people kind of resent it. You know, one of you, I can't remember who it was, but one of you guys I'm talking to tonight was saying how it was a damn shame. You know?
It was me, Roger. Well, so many of our audience would regard it in that way, so I said on behalf of...
Right, well, that is a cross that I have to bear. And as I was saying to you before, it's not a damn shame for me. We had run our course. You know, we were... You know, that was a bad marriage from... Although we produced some good work, it was a bad marriage from Dark Side of the Moon on. You know, we were very much at odds with each other. There were enormous conflicts in the band. We shared almost no musical, philosophical, political, or any other values with each other. And we were held together simply by the weight of the name, you know, and the ease of living under that kind of corporate umbrella. But that's not a happy experience, in fact, for an individual who's in it, who still has a need to change, develop, express themselves, you know, and become more themselves, go more through the process of individuation.
I respect that, thanks.
It becomes a cage, you know. And I can understand people, and I'm very happy and moved by the fact that people like the work that we did together. And at certain points, you know, we were a great band. We worked really well together. We produced some great stuff. It was good. But, you know, when a thing's over, it's over.
Okay. Well?
I'm going to go. Then you can have help, I'm sure, again. When you look back in all your years of career, what do you consider as your greatest accomplishment that makes you prouder than anything else?
I guess the wall.
Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
I just think it's a very cohesive and very moving piece of work. And it works on lots of levels, you know. It's got some good tunes in it, so it works on a surface level, but it's also got a lot of ideas in it that find a resonance with a lot of people who listen to it. I get lots and lots of requests every year from schools, not just in England and North America, but all around the world, who want to put on little performances of the work in their schools, for which I always give permission, and I'm very, you know, happy. And people use it as a teaching tool and as a way of communicating with one another. And so it's been a very successful piece of work from all those points of view, and I'm really proud of that. I mean, if I look back at all the records that I've made or been involved in making, I would say that there were three that were really, really outstanding and some other good ones. The three outstanding ones are Dark Side of the Moon, The Wall, and Amused to Death.
I agree with that. And if you look all back, is there something that you haven't done or that you've done on your career that you regret now?
Something that I regret from the past? No.
Not at all?
No. You know, I mean, there might be small things, but there's nothing that I would dwell upon, you know?
Okay.
I try as much as possible to be here now, you know, and not dwell too much on the past or the future.
Okay.
All right, well, I think if everyone's done...
I'm good for another one if you are. Jeff again from Toronto.
Yes, hi.
Talking to a number of artists recently about the cost of going to artistic events, from be it sports to the opera to a rock show. The tickets for this tour, at least for the Toronto show, I've noticed range between $30 and $50. Why do you think rock shows, particularly this one, are so much more affordable than, say, sports events? Or do you have any opinion on this matter?
Well, I didn't know they were, but it's a very interesting question. I don't know. Why? What does a football ticket cost? Maybe there's a greater demand, you know. I don't know.
You're looking at 2, 3, 4 times as much for a basketball game, for instance.
Well, I guess there's just that much more demand. And I guess also that they're completely, you know, the NBA is entirely profit motivated, I would suggest.
I just might suggest that it's kind of a shame that the average person, the kid with the father who's of a middle income, can't, you know, see a bit of a sports game or potentially a concert because it's gotten so out of whack.
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's an enormous shame. You know, the guys in my band won't be getting huge salaries, and I won't be getting any salary. I mean, there's no way my tour will make money. So, you know, at the end of the tour, I'll be writing out a check for whatever the deficit is. And I, in a way, I don't mind doing that. I've done very well over my career, and I've made a very good living, and it's never bothered me that I underwrite the tours that I do. It's not a problem, you know. I don't do it for the money, so it doesn't worry me. Having said that, it would be nice if it could nearly break even. It won't. I know it won't. I know it'll run at a loss, and that doesn't really worry me. But I'm glad to hear you say that the tickets are at a level that you think, you know, ordinary people can afford.
No, I think people are very excited about the prospect of paying $30 to $50 to see Roger Waters.
All right, good. Well, I'm glad about that, you know.
Mr. Waters, Mathieu Noncourt from Montreal.
Yeah.
What kind of music do you listen to these days?
Well, at the moment, I'm listening to my old repertoire, and I'm also listening to the work that I've been doing on Sayura. I'm going to Paris on June the 6th to record the choruses. I demoed all the solo parts with some opera singers in Switzerland when I was there last month. And so my listening to music at the moment is work. When I'm not working on my own music, I don't listen to music. Unless somebody, you know, who I particularly love has an album out and I get to hear about it for some reason or another. If there's a new Neil Young album out, I will go and buy it and listen to it. But by and large, I don't listen to radio, you know. Well, there's very few radio stations playing music in England. And the ones that are, I find unlistenable to. And in the States now, I find less and less there's a dearth of the great FM rock stations that there used to be in the past, where disc jockeys chose the material that they were going to play. And I think there's, as far as I can see, there's a little bit of a resurgence of that, you know, giving the DJ a bit of credit and letting him put his programs of material together in a way that seems fitting to him, and also communicating, I guess, on the telephone with the audience, and so they have some kind of input. But for years through the 80s, you know, certainly through the 80s and most of the 90s as well, it seemed that it was all being done on demographics, and the powers that be who owned the radio stations were deciding who, you know, what would make the most money, what would attract the audience, and therefore how they could, you know, get the best ratings, and therefore how they could make the most money by selling the most advertising to the most important clients, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, welcome to the machine. I hope that is beginning to reverse a bit. I know it is in some of the markets. Jim Ladd, for instance, who was on the Radio Terror show, now has his own, you know, nighttime or evening show on KLOS FM in LA, where it's his show and he does what he wants.
Roger, as some of us, we radio stations will be announcing your imminent tour dates.
Yeah.
Can you expand, at the risk of being premature, you mentioned quad sound and projectors and so on, but in terms of this show, is there anything else you could add about what people will expect when they see you this summer?
Well, at the moment I'm trying to whittle the set list down from, you know, about 5 hours down to 2 and a bit. And it's not easy. I've written down all the songs that I really like to perform, and I'm now having to cut a bunch of them out because there just won't be time to do them. As always with my shows, there won't be any support band, you know, so be there on time, because whatever show time is, that's when we'll start, and it will be me and my band right from the word go. There will be an interval in the middle, and that's all I can say, really.
Our pleasure, Roger. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you.